This episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast is brought to you by Gusto, modern, easy payroll benefits for small businesses across the country. And because you're a listener, you get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. Find out at gusto.com/tape. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz and my guest today is Keith Ferrazzi. He is the founder and chairman of Ferrazzi Greenlight. He's also a New York Times best-selling author. In fact, you may have heard him on with Never Eat Alone. That's how long I've been doing this show. And he's got a new book out called Leading Without Authority, How the New Power of Co-Elevation Can Break Down Silos, Transform Teams, and Reinvent Collaboration. So, Keith, welcome back.
John, thank you so much. And that was a long time ago if we were back for Never Eat Alone.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, this is... I think this is your third book kind of in a series where it feels like the at least the first two book, you know, was all about building relationships and maybe more particularly about the importance of generosity in building relationships. How would you say that this Leading Without Authority fits into that theme?
Well, this is my very first leadership book. Never Eat Alone, of course, was a book that's great for any individual contributor who is focused on building opportunity in their life, really reinventing the principle of networking to be rich and authentic relationship generation in service of all of the rich opportunities available to you in the world.
Right.
Now, you spin ahead 15 years almost, and you get to where we are today. I have been coaching executive teams for nearly 20 years now. All of my work focuses on helping executive teams be high-performing. And today, through this crisis that we're in, I'm coaching the Delta Airlines team, General Motors team, the Verizon team. But I also take under my wing a whole set of small and medium-sized businesses, some even venture startups. And I do that in a different business model than my primary coaching. I believe that the team itself is an entity that is under-curated in terms of the focus of a CEO. We focus on strategy and what the right business plan is, and then we go down into individual performance. Most organizations are very hub and spoke. What we have seen over the last 20 years is that so much value can be gained from a team if the team commits to a new word that I've created, if the team commits to co-elevate,
yeah.
If the team commits to a shared mission, but also to each other's success. Shifting the burden of accountability from you as a leader into the fabric of the team. The team has to hold each other accountable. The team has to give each other feedback. The team has to be candid in a room. It cannot be conflict avoidant. The team has to lift each other's energy up. So the entire focus is shifting the burden from hub and spoke to a leader into the fabric of a team, and we find disproportionate outcomes occur.
Yeah, this idea of co-elevating, of course, you know, it runs a little counter to like climbing the corporate ladder, right? I mean, it's unfortunately the culture of some teams is if I get ahead, then you know you don't. You're kind of saying we've got to ditch that completely, right?
Well, what I'm saying is my book has two audiences. One audience is a standing leader today, whether you're an owner operator, whether you're a leader in an organization, etc. You've got to stop asking yourself, how do I gain more authority, control, and power to achieve more? The reality is, how do you partner more? Real extraordinary exponential change is going to happen when an individual with a vision can co-create and enlist with others extraordinary transformative outcomes. So I don't give a damn, really, it doesn't matter if you even have the title of the leader today.
Yeah.
Anybody today with a vision and the ability to enlist others is a leader. That is the definition. And if you're leaning on the control and authority of traditional leadership, then you're going to get mediocrity, and you deserve it. Because you need to come into the new era of the world where we are dealing with goals, audacious goals, transformative goals, and networks of people that you have to unleash. That is leadership today.
Yeah, and I think some companies sort of famously have promoted this sort of cross-functional teamwork even. So, I mean, I think the definition of a team might even have changed. That it, you know, at one point it was like, yeah, we're in marketing and we do this over here as a team. But you're almost suggesting that team is everywhere.
Well, it's so funny. You might have read my book, because the very first chapter of my book is called Who's Your Team?
Yeah.
And the idea is the first, you got to just, I don't give a damn about org structures. They get in the way of progress.
Right.
What you have to ask yourself is, what am I trying to achieve and who do I need to get there? That is my team. Now, of course, the reason for the book is it teaches you, how do you enlist people that don't report to you, that have their own busy schedules, that have their own, you know, issues. And not surprising to you, the core ethic of all of my work has always been leading with generosity, leading with service. So how do you literally reach out and co-create with people? How do you reach out and enlist people into your vision by inviting them into their vision, which is, let me pause on that. It's a powerful statement. The way you get people on your team is to get them on their team, to share the ownership of the outcomes with a group of individuals so that they feel that they are a part of and owner of this team, this movement, this vision, this passion, whatever it happens to be. And the book breaks down in Leading Without Authority. How do you enlist people in that co-elevating relationship?
And I think one of the things that this implies, of course, this is not going to work if this, I mean, in a lot of ways, you could have like the rebel, you know, leader who's going out really pushing this, but this is really a culture thing across an organization, isn't it?
Well, yes and no, because what I have found is when I have executed this book or taught this book, any person in the room could become a leader without authority. It doesn't really matter if the group as a whole ordains this process. Mm. Your ability to enlist others is what matters. I'll spin back to the old days when I was at Deloitte. You know, I was the chief marketing officer of Deloitte, but when I was in my early 20s, I was just a kid at Deloitte. I thought that Deloitte should have a bigger brand. I enlisted people in asking the question, how could we have a bigger brand? How could we build share? And as a kid, literally a kid, I created the marketing function without having it be called a marketing function. I ultimately was ordained as the chief marketing officer because I was doing the damn job in my late 20s. So I was chief marketing officer of Deloitte in my late 20s because I led without authority. And anybody can do that today. In fact, I would argue that every organization needs more of their people to do that. If you are a leader today, what you need to be doing is you need to be utilizing this book to teach your people to lead without authority. Because if they're still sitting on their hands waiting for you to ordain them as a leader, you're missing out on the juice that you need from your team. And if you, on the other hand, are sitting in your hands waiting for somebody to ordain you, then you're missing out on the opportunity to lead and transform an organization from wherever you are.
I would just suspect that some folks that have taken this route, whether they've read your book or not, but certainly have taken this route, probably get a greater sense of maybe joy in the job they're doing.
Say that again.
I think people that have taken made the choice, as you did, to lead without authority, probably find a much greater sense of satisfaction in the work they're doing.
Well, listen, I think anybody who shows up like a lamb in the organization waiting to be guided, shepherded, slaughtered, whatever it is, of course you can't have the same power, the joy, the thrill than if you're showing up as an entrepreneur inside of a company trying to add value and showing that you can add value. The value of leading without authority is it teaches anybody in the company how to cut through bureaucracy, how anybody in the company can ignore the traditional cultural barriers to transformational change. Anybody can be a change agent. And this book teaches you to become that change agent.
Everyone loves payday, but loving a payroll provider, that's a little weird. Still, small businesses across the country love running payroll with Gusto. Gusto automatically files and pays your taxes. It's super easy to use, and you can add benefits and management tools to help take care of your team and keep your business safe. It's loyal. It's modern. You might fall in love yourself. Hey, and as a listener, you get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. So try a demo and test it out at gusto.com/tape. That's gusto.com/tape. What impact do you think? I think obviously we're recording this in April of 2020. The world is going through a lot of dramatic change right now. A lot of people are working from home, and maybe we'll stay there, frankly. Does that Does that kind of changing virtual world, you know, change this type of approach to leadership?
Yes. Well, it does in some ways. What I would say is that the changing virtual world makes this mandatory.
Yeah.
Adam Grant, who read my first book, Never the Lone, and then started studying the subject of generosity and its impact on the workplace, Adam claims that this book is actually the first roadmap to the new operating system for the world of work. So I've gotten 23 CEOs of major corporations to read this book, and hands down, like Brian Cornell of Target and others, Andy Sieg of Merrill Lynch, they have gone on record as suggesting that co-elevation is the operating system for the new workplace. So I believe that we have really cracked the code of what does it mean to manage and lead in today's modern workplace, and we have documented it in this book. Now, one of the big things that just occurred is remote, like you suggested. Mm-hmm. Well, ironically, but probably not a surprise, in 2012, I raised $2 million, and my research institute did 20 studies on the subject of remote teams and remote leadership. And we published them in Harvard Business Review. We have been the leaders of how to work remotely for quite some time, hands down leaders. Zoom just acknowledged us as the clear thought leaders in this space, and I'm doing a weekly stand-up for them and Fast Company and a bunch of other places. We have integrated that principle, that research, into this book. Now, as a follow-up to this podcast, if anybody is interested, we do really deep dives on teaching people how to be remote leaders and run remote teams. Those exist on a website called FirazzyLearning.com. And there's a lot of free content there, free webinars, those kind of things. So FirazzyLearning.com, if you want to go one step further into this content, please do join us and engage with us there.
Awesome. We'll have that in the show notes. If I'm a leader listening to this, regardless of the size of my team, you know, how do you get started? Because things like having, you know, allowing people to have candid conversations, you know, those haven't always existed inside of some organizations. But if I want to make that change, you know, how do I get started letting people know that this is the new order?
Yeah, thank you for that. So I have created a process that I call a recontracting. It's literally a diagnostic tool and a script. So if you sit down with your team, and assume for a second you're the leader, and even if you're not the leader, you could still suggest this to the team, which is an open discussion on what is our social contract today? You mentioned candor. Do you realize that 74% of people in work today claim that they do not have permission to speak candidly in meetings?
Right.
74%. That is intolerable. That is ridiculous. So you need to be able, if in your team you do our diagnostic, this recontracting diagnostic, if you do our diagnostic and you do it confidentially among the team, and then you look at the category called candor, and from a scale of 0 to 5, if the average team member says we're at a 2.2, you've got some real work to do. Now, I use 2.2 specifically because that actually is the number that the average team reports relative to its candor on a scale of 0 to 5. So once you see it, we don't need to be ashamed. We don't need to wring our hands about it. We just get to work. And then the practices in the book will teach you how do you then add increasing amounts of candor. So recontracting is really what you ask for. What is the first step? It's transparency and a pinky swear agreement among the team that we're going to move this behavior behind with a set of practices. Because you get the awakening first through the diagnostic, through the recontracting.
Yeah.
And then you move from that awakening into practicing it.
So the concept even of co-elevation certainly, I think, comes with a fair amount of, hey, we're going to hold each other accountable for results. And it
exactly.
it seems to me that, you know, that's going to take some work, and that's going to take some trust that maybe doesn't exist. How would you, are there ways that you would suggest that key component, you know, has to be part of this recontracting?
So we have 8 components of the recontracting, right? Mm-hmm. And the first is as we, well, we, I don't know if it's the first or not, but the relationship is so crucial.
Right.
Do people feel psychologically safe with each other?
Yep.
And are there strong relationships? I'll give you a couple of practices in the amount of time that we have. Every time you start a meeting, you should do a quick sweet and sour. Everybody goes around. The whole process takes 5 minutes. What's going on right now in your life, sweet and sour? Just the movement from a transactional environment to a slightly more relational environment gives people more psychological safety. Okay? Candor. In the middle of a meeting, you should stop. And particularly in a remote environment, if you said in the middle of a meeting, hey, we're going to move everybody into small rooms, because you can do this on Zoom very easily.
Right.
You're in a room,
yep.
And you push a button, and everybody goes into groups of two, just like a snap of the fingers. We're going to go into small rooms, and I want everybody to talk about what's not being said. What's not being said in the room? And then when we come back, we're all going to share what's not being said. There you are. You're conditioning people to have higher degrees of candor, right? So collaboration. You use your team meetings more for collaborative problem solving than report outs. Report outs are the greatest wasted time of a valuable group of people. You need to be using them at least 50% of your time together for collaboration. Put a question on the table, chew on it, break into small groups, come back. So again, this is the longer webinar that I'm doing on they can find on FrazzyLearning.com. The longer webinar will go into very details. How do you recontract? What are the practices, etc.? But so we've given the good tee up here.
So I know this is early stage for doing this work, but I assume you've been testing it out in some places. Have you started to sense how much increased productivity results, you know, people that are operating this way are starting to see?
Yeah. Well, no, this isn't early. I mean, we've been in this business since 2000. Mm. We just celebrated our 20th year anniversary on April 5th as a firm. And our entire mission as a company is to transform teams that transform the world. I can tell you that there is a fantastic aerospace company over in Pasadena that has been implementing this process. And they claim that this was the reason that they increased share price by $20. Mm. Dun & Bradstreet CEO Bob Kerrigan points to this process as one of the reasons. At the time, he's now the CEO of Audible. At the time, he was able to increase his share price by more than 20%. General Motors, the CFO, at the time coming out of bankruptcy, claimed that this was one of the primary reasons they didn't go back into bankruptcy. So productivity, what we find statistically is in places that we implement this where you can measure productivity, like call centers and other things, sales forces, we get a 50% increase in productivity. When you implement co-elevation, you get a 50% increase in productivity, which, you know, from a production perspective is extraordinary, and then cascading that into the results.
Yeah.
Sales organizations, it's revenue, organization as a whole, shareholder value.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Keith, tell people where they can find out more. You've already shared Farazi Learning, and we'll have that in the show notes. Any place else you want to send people
to send people, FarazziLearning.com.
Awesome.
Yeah, that'll be great.
So, Keith, thanks for dropping by the Duct Tape Podcast, and hopefully we will see you soon out there on the road.
John, let's not wait 15 years till we do this again.
You got it. All right, take care.
Cheers.